October is here, even if the air doesn't have that signature Wisconsin chill quite yet.
The end of September brought some good air quality around the state, but right now the state DNR has its eyes on what was a low point when we had day after day of bad air quality days because of smoke from Canadian wildfires last year.
Even now, parts of the southern border of Canada are under an extreme fire danger risk, and environmental scientists are digging into lessons from those days of wildfire smoke and what they can teach us about wider issues of air quality and climate change.
Tracy Holloway is a professor at UW-Madison in the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies and the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. She's also part of a nonprofit called Science Moms, who teach people about how climate change affects kids. Tracy, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
It's really a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Rob.
Before we get into some of the particulars of air quality, I want to talk about a wider effort that you're part of taking what we know about air quality, environmental science, and climate change and bringing it to the public in maybe a different way than people are used to. Can you talk a little bit about what you've been working on?
Sure. For the last few years, I've been part of an initiative called Science Moms. And the goal here is just to make a lot of the science around climate change more accessible and relevant to everyday people. And there's a lot of different science outreach efforts, but until the Science Moms program, none had really been targeted at moms who are always thinking about what's happening 10, 20, 30 years down the road as we are trying to make the future better for our kids. So I'm a mom and I'm a scientist, and it's been really fun to be part of this program that's trying to bring those two issues together.
I want to dig into one issue now that the state is working on, looking back at the wildfire smoke from last year. Now, the wildfires were happening, of course, in Canada, but last summer we had so many days where we could smell wildfire smoke where it had a potential health impact here. Lived in the Midwest for over five decades, and I can't think back to a time where that was something I even thought about. Can you talk, first of all, about what we were seeing? Remind us what we were seeing last summer.
Last summer here in Wisconsin, we had unprecedented levels of air pollution. And the main one that we talk about is particulate matter. And we talk especially about what's called fine particulate matter, or PM2.5. And these are suspended particles of solid or liquid that are associated with respiratory disease, cardiovascular disease, they make our eyes itch, and they even shorten life expectancy. So these are a big issue for public health, and actually they've been regulated in the United States for decades. Unfortunately, we can't control every source of particulate matter, and the big wildfires in Canada are a great example of sources beyond our control.
Now, that's something that caught our eye. The state DNR is doing an exceptional event demonstration. This is a technical thing that they are doing to satisfy some federal requirements, as I understand it. Can you talk us through what the kind of things they're looking at and why they're doing it now?
Absolutely. The exceptional event rule is from the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. And it basically offers a way for states to strike air pollution days that are really outside of their control. One way to contextualize this is to think about it like students and grades, because the federal EPA sets a limit on how clean the air has to be in every state in the United States. We all have the same limit that we're trying to hit. And we have little instruments across the state that are, or big instruments, they're housed in trailers, that measure the air every hour of every day. And one of the big metrics that the state is focused on right now is if you take the measurements from the whole year and average them together, is it cleaner or dirtier than we are allowed to be to meet the Clean Air Act rule? And just earlier this year, in early 2024, the threshold of what was considered clean enough got tightened. So actually, we're trying to meet a cleaner air pollution standard than we've ever had to meet before, while at the same time, we have this unprecedented high levels of smoke coming in from Canada that are beyond our control. So there's a challenge that Wisconsin faces, and many, many states are facing it right now, where they're trying to meet a stricter grading scale at the same time having all this smoke coming in that they couldn't do anything about no matter what their in-state policies were.
Tracy, when it comes to air quality, take out the wildfire smoke for just a moment. I've seen you quoted elsewhere saying there's some good news. We have some room for optimism. We've actually been making progress for the most part on our air quality. What have you seen?
It is a good news story, except for wildfires. In Wisconsin and across the United States, our air has been getting cleaner and cleaner for all of the health-relevant pollutants that are regulated under the Clean Air Act. And this is due to cleaner cars, cleaner power plants, cleaner industry. And, you know, I think a lot of people don't realize how much we've done since 1970 to make our air clean and healthy, and how much we're already doing and continue to do. So every year, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources comes out with a report tracking how clean our air is getting. And this reports information from monitors all across the state that are measuring our air. And it is a good news story for everything within our control. And that's why it's important to make sure that we're not being unfairly penalized for air pollution coming in from Canada due to wildfires.
I will say, getting back to the bad news, last year, I think for the first time in my life, I got hooked on watching those air quality maps for Wisconsin, for where my kids are going to college. What can we take in our personal lives and do with that information? How much control do we have over our lives when there's that much particulate matter in our air?
That is a really good question, because there's some things we can do and some things we can't do. When we're outside in high air pollution situations, the best measure you can take is to wear a mask, like those N95 masks that you may have in your drawer from the pandemic days. But when you're indoors, there's actually a lot you can do, because there are a lot of steps we can take to create cleaner air in our indoor environment. And there are air purifiers that you can buy from the store or from online, but you can actually make your own air purifier using a common box fan and paper HEPA filters and duct tape that studies have shown works just as well as many of the store-bought models. So it doesn't have to be a major investment to make a pretty effective air purifier for your indoor air.
We are talking about air quality, wildfires, and our personal health with Tracy Holloway, environmental science professor at UW-Madison. Tracy, you lead a team for NASA called the Health and Air Quality Applied Sciences Team, looking deeply at the kind of things we're talking about right now. Can you talk about your work with NASA a little bit and the kinds of things you're doing to help us connect the dots between our air and our well-being?
Well, it's been really exciting over the last decade or so to see how satellites up in space can provide information that is so useful to people on the ground. And one example of how we can use satellite data is in terms of figuring out, is an air pollution event due to local sources, or is it due to wildfires in Canada? And when we have just one monitor and the data from the monitor, that doesn't tell us where it came from. But up in space, looking down, you can see these big plumes of smoke moving across wide areas. But we can even see with satellites chemicals in the air that are invisible to our human eye. And that helps us see whether some neighborhoods may be breathing dirtier air than other neighborhoods, or how individual sources are contributing to air pollution problems. So it's been really exciting to be at the forefront of this, working with NASA and states across the country and organizations around the world who are excited about the new technology to support clean air.
Are we getting to a point where we can have really solid predictions, kind of like a weather forecast, but instead of, you know, rain coming in 3 days, this wildfire plume, it's likely to descend down to ground level in 3 days, so plan accordingly, or ozone-causing chemicals are going to concentrate in this area. Are we getting better at forecasting these things?
Yes, we are absolutely getting better at forecasting air pollution, in part because of the data from the satellites that helps us see what's happening over oceans or over continents, even where we don't have a lot of data. Actually, both the EPA and some of our phone-based apps have these air pollution forecasts available, and they can be really helpful in terms of planning out what day you might run, whether to run tomorrow or to go ahead and run today, or other activities that might be affected by visibility or by having good air to breathe. So the forecast is really a growing area of science, and it's something that's being implemented by our own government, by private companies. And actually, just this month, the State Department rolled out a new air quality forecast around the world based on some of the work out of the NASA team that I lead.
Bringing things kind of full circle, we know climate change is raising our risk of a lot of different disastrous events. We're getting maybe better at predicting some of these things like air quality, but I think there could be a feeling of powerlessness. If you're breathing wildfire smoke in the Midwest that's coming from Canada, well, we can't put out those wildfires from here. If we watch those hurricanes plunge further and further inland, can you talk about ways that people can feel empowered to try to deal with some of the root causes that make these disasters more disastrous?
Well, one of the reasons I really have enjoyed working with the Science Moms program is because they've helped distill a lot of complex competing issues into some news you can use. And they have a three-step to-do list to help take control of climate change. And one is to swap, which is to say, when you're making a big purchase, think about whether this is something that can be moving us forward in a clean energy way, like energy efficient dishwasher or a heating system with a heat pump or an electric vehicle, those kind of things. Two is to share. The biggest thing people can do to make a change is to talk about issues, and especially things like climate change that sometimes get politicized. If people are talking in their community or talking with their friends and just making these issues more normal to have as part of our decision-making process, as opposed to something that people don't want to talk about because it might offend somebody. And I'd say the third issue is to speak up on issues that you care about when we have opportunities with the elections or with our community decision-making or with what kind of school buses to be buying for our kids. Any of these things, there's a lot of opportunities in our democracy to speak up on issues you care about. And so swap, share, and speak up are kind of the three-part system that the Science Moms have come up with.
Something I always wonder when I'm talking to somebody who's really focusing up close on the impacts of climate change, how optimistic are you, or pessimistic, or the mix thereof, when you look at our short and medium-term future?
I am really an optimist because I think about the successes that we've had as humans overcoming big problems. And just in my area of work related to chemicals in the air, air pollution was getting dirtier and dirtier through the 1960s. And then in 1970, the Clean Air Act was passed. We turned a corner and our air has been getting healthier ever since then. And in 1985, we discovered the ozone hole over Antarctica. And then 2 years later, 1987, we passed the Montreal Protocol. And now the ozone hole is in recovery. So climate change is not something that will be solved overnight. But when my kids look back on the 2020s, I would love it if they said that is when we turned a corner on climate change and we started moving in the direction of a solution.
Tracy, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob. It's really been a pleasure.
Tracy Holloway is a professor at UW-Madison in the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies and the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences.